you just missed a riveting conversation about Syracuse basketball where Dave said a lot of words and I didn't know what any of them meant.
Oh, what does that mean? I actually thought that was a nice little story there for you.
I have no idea who that comp is. I've never heard of him before in my life. So,
do you know what Google is? It could help you. And does it really matter? It's just a player wearing a jersey out in a place you shouldn't be wearing a jersey.
Han only cares about Eric Devendorf references.
There we go.
And welcome to the Hoop Collective. This is Ramona Shelburne here today. Cassidy is off on some fabulous vacation. Janae is being a pro basketball player, the WNBA. She tends to do that this time of year. So we've got two all-star shooting guards subbing in tonight. Dave McMenamin out in the land. Are you still in the land, Dave?
I am here until there is a decision made. So I am anchored to the land. Yes.
Oh, wow.
I'm thrilled about that news. So yeah, let's talk basketball.
You sound like you're thrilled.
You know, cause I always like to spend year round in Cleveland. I never go anywhere in the off season, but yeah.
No,
that's great.
Not at all. And out in Oklahoma City, which is going to be one of the main hubs outside of the land, we got Royce Young.
That's right. And I would also, much like Dave, rather be nowhere else, but I mean that sincerely.
Well, Royce and Dave, I assume we will be seeing a lot of you standing up front of either Quicken Loans Arena or the Integra Center in Oklahoma City over the next couple of days. Where are we as we are, a week out from free agency? I think LeBron officially starts this clock on Friday when he has to decide whether to pick up his player option or not. Right, Dave?
Right. Yeah. Friday at midnight, he will either say he's going to come back to the Cavs next year for $35 million or opt out, as we all expect him to do. And then we find out, sometime in the coming days after that, whether this is going to be a situation where he is leaving, obviously that would be the biggest story, or if he's staying, what type of deal is he looking at? Will he max out with the Cavs and give them what's left of his basketball career with a 5-year deal? Or will he sign, which I believe if he does come back to Cleveland, sign a 1+1 deal, give himself an option in the second year, and then maybe do this entire thing all over again in the summer of 2019?
Oh boy. I'm sure that's what we're all rooting for.
I want him just to do this every summer until he's like 68 years old.
It's like when he stopped wearing the headband.
Yeah. All right, guys, I'm going to stop doing the 1+1s. Yeah. It's finally happening.
Well, Dave, it's interesting talking about LeBron because in previous LeBron free agencies, I felt like the NBA clock stopped. Like, literally, there was no business being done until LeBron's decided. This year, it doesn't feel that way. Like, I feel like there's going to be a lot of other parts of free agency and teams that get settled, maybe even before LeBron, because he doesn't have that long a list, right? Like, not everything is tied to LeBron this year.
Right. And Ramona, you had a story, I think just like LeBron has learned from his free agency, yep. And you wrote a story that, he's not going to really be seeking out elaborate pitches from teams. He's going to keep it more low key. I think that's something he's learned over, mm-hmm. 2010, which was, to quote a source of mine, a dog and pony show, to 2014 that still had that modicum of drama to it, people tracking the planes of Dan Gilbert going down to Miami. He's trying to eliminate all that. And I think teams, conversely, they've learned from these two free agencies that he's been through that what are we really going to benefit by halting all of our business to wait and see what he's going to do? There are certain teams that are going to be in it and need to wait, and Cleveland, the Los Angeles Lakers at the top of that list. But beyond that, you gotta have an alternate route that you're ready to run down pretty quickly, or else you're just hurting your own business.
And I'm curious what that means to the Cavs, right? Like if LeBron were to take, I think somebody tweeted out like his average number of days that he takes to decide is somewhere like 9.8 days or something, right? If it takes that long, would the Cavs wait? Can they wait?
Yeah, they should. I mean, what's their alternative? The only time they've been successful as a franchise in their history, basically, or certainly successful in terms of a perennial championship contender, is when LeBron James is on the roster. And so I think the Cavs would be severely misinformed and short-sighted for them not to wait out the LeBron scenario. Now, some other teams out there, I wouldn't say, are in that exact same boat.
Right. Can Philly wait? Can Houston wait? I don't know that they can.
Right, and I don't know if Houston necessarily needs to, because they have an alternative without LeBron that will allow them to keep some of their role players that they would probably have to lose if they got him, and focus on their own guys. Like Clint Capela, is a huge part of their team last year, and obviously you can't compare apples to apples, LeBron and Clint Capela, but the way the team was constructed, if you take care of him, then you can maybe get back to the Western Conference Finals without LeBron. Philly, I think, is a really interesting case, because do they go for plan B in terms of superstar B, whether that be Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, even though LeBron, obviously, any time you listen to Brett Pound talk over the last 24 months, you knew that that's the guy that he wants, but he could determine that. And again, Brian Windhorst has been saying it. I've been saying it for about a week now, that it seems to be kind of a two-team race right now between the Lakers and the Cavs. Not to say that Philly has no chance, but there seems to be, just the people you talk to, that there's a bit of a gap there. And so I think Philly would be well informed to be coming up with an alternative solution.
Yeah, and Philly, in terms of what they have to decide and do with their cap space, they have J.J. Redick, they have Ilyasova, they have Bellinelli. All those guys can leave. So all the shooting that helped them get to the playoffs and helped them become a very dangerous team, those guys can sign elsewhere while they're waiting around on LeBron. The other option, which we'll send this one out to Oklahoma City, is Paul George, who in a lot of ways is a better fit for a team like the 76ers than LeBron would be, just in terms of the type of game he has, the age he is relative to the Sixers' young core. Royce, everything we hear, though, is that the Thunder are very confident that Paul George will be staying right where he is. What is the source of that confidence?
I think a lot of it just has to do with the fact of kind of the relationship that Westbrook and Paul George built throughout the season, which, I think from the Thunder perspective went better than even they expected. And I think that a lot of the optimism, Ramona, stems from the fact that they're just kind of in this conversation at all, and not to tamp down the excitement coming out of Oklahoma City about it. But I do just think that, look, this time last year, if you flash forward, the Thunder would not be even getting a meeting with Paul George. And the fact that they can sit here and realistically feel like that they have a strong chance to re-sign the guy, even if it's a 1+1, to them feels in some ways like a win. Now, if Paul George ends up leaving, then we're going to relitigate the Victor Oladipo trade again, and you're going to look at this and you're going to say this was a risk that the Thunder shouldn't have taken. But Sam Presti's making that trade 10 times out of 10. He's taken this chance. He has Russell Westbrook in the prime of his career. At the time, he didn't have Russell Westbrook signed to a max level extension.
That's right.
So, this is just something that Presti looked at. People are going to be critical, and they're going to evaluate Sam Presti's tenure as the general manager of the Oklahoma City Thunder for some big moves that he did make and some big moves that he didn't make. But one thing you can't ever say about the guy is that he doesn't give it a go. And in trying to recover from losing Kevin Durant, this is the direction they went. So from the Thunder perspective, Ramona, they look at this like, look, they feel like they're kind of in pole position, mainly for the reason of they've had a year-long head start to recruit the guy. There's a lot of focus on tampering. Well, the Thunder have been tampering with Paul George now for a year, effectively. and they've been legally doing it, because that's why they made this move, is to be able to get in the room with the guy and have a chance at him. Now, with reference to LeBron, as you guys were talking about that, one domino to me that is connected to this is Paul George, right? And the way that these things are going to interlock with each other, especially the Los Angeles Laker part of this, if – let's say Paul George decides to re-sign with the Thunder on July 3rd or something, even if it's a 1+1. That's a pretty strong indication that, in my mind, that LeBron is not looking at the Lakers anymore, right? So, these type of things do feel like that they're connected in some way. It feels like Paul George is not going to make a decision completely independent of LeBron's decision. If LeBron goes to the Lakers and he goes first, then you have to be sitting there and you all eyes towards Paul George. If Paul George goes to the Lakers first, now you're all eyes at LeBron. Why is Paul George going there? So in terms of a lot of these other teams, Philly, Houston, they may not be sitting around on their hands waiting for LeBron to do it. But in terms of Paul George and the Thunder, they certainly will be.
Royce, can you just make that entire point over again for me in less of a Morgan Freeman, Denzel Washington voice, more of a Jamie Foxx voice? Yeah, please. Can you do that for me?
I don't know. Yeah. I need to write a better script, though. My script was a little bloated, I think. I don't think
Listen, you guys both write those, like, the SportsCenter essays sometimes, right? And you have
I got one to do tomorrow.
Right? You've got these lines that you write sometimes. And you go, man, that feels cheesy.
Yeah. But I really my eyes at myself. That.
But then when you read it and they cut it together, it's okay. You know, like it actually, the moment calls for drama. So I'm not saying that that wasn't incredibly cheesy. And if that was really their pitch, which I still am, I want to see verification that was really their pitch. But it's real. I mean, it out of context, it looks terrible, right?
Oh, you cut it together with some slick editing and some cool music.
Yeah, if you
music.
Have a good Hollywood direct, you know, some nice editing, well produced package with actually the Denzel Washington voice, that might be kind of cool.
Now I'm imagining Dave's essay read by Jamie Foxx. I can't imagine.
Yes. I gotta see if I can pull some strings to get that read tomorrow. While you dreamt, you built two. Like it's
I know.
But you know what? I'd like to see the finished product because I would probably like it because I'm a sucker for all those things.
Yeah.
So you write those essays and you write this line like, you know, Dave, I would imagine your first line for tomorrow's essay on LeBron is something like, he came home 4 years ago to deliver a championship to the land. Right? Something like that.
Notes, Dave. Yeah. You should be writing
verbatim. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Clickety clack, clickety clack.
He made good on one promise. But what does his future hold? Right? Like something like you write it and you're like, that sounds so cheesy. But when they cut it together and they get those SKU producers and they're like really talented, the SKU producers are usually like the young, talented people who are hungry and want to make a name for themselves. So I love those people because they like turn around our essays and make them seem like very artistic and cool. I think, you know, like I'm trying to imagine the words that were leaked in the Lakers' supposed pitch to Paul George as being cut by one of those people or even a Hollywood director or background or something like that. Like it couldn't possibly read as cheesy in real life unless it was just delivered by Rob Pelinka, like as is.
Right. Or
now unless, a dramatic reading by Rob Pelinka.
Or unless whoever put together that video when Kobe came back from his Achilles of the jersey being torn apart by a bolt of lightning and dramatic like music playing in the background for 4.5 minutes. Well, so there you go. So unless Kobe's directing it, it will come out good.
Hey, might win
an
Oscar.
I don't know. They do have an Oscar winner in the
exactly.
Whom they can call upon to make a recruiting pitch to Paul George.
They've made some strides since then, the whole Kobe ink, I think.
So, well, here's the thing. Like, first of all, I have no idea how you can allow that to leak. Like, that's unbelievably sloppy if that's really their pitch, if that's a real story. But, you know, especially for a team that is under intense scrutiny for tampering, like that is like it's even though it's unintentional tampering, it kind of is tampering, isn't it? Like theoretically, that would be about another team's free agent,
right?
Whether they leaked it or not, I mean, the fact that got out kind of is tampering.
Yeah, that's a good point. And like, you know, this is one of those things, Ramona, where you like dive down the NBA conspiracy rabbit hole and you can just get lost in it. But like, you start like connecting the dots, you know, like you're like an episode of NBA CSI where you're like, okay, so like, did the Lakers do they have a good idea that Paul George isn't going to stay? And so and he's going to commit to the Thunder before July 1st, before they can even pitch him in free agency. So now they're trying to strategically leak some of their plans for him to change his mind. And does that mean that, you know, you can just like
a Laker loyalist who thought this pitch is so bad, I have to stop them from making
exactly. Yeah. You can do it the opposite way. I have to stop them and put this out. They'll change course. Yeah, maybe that's really what it is, Ramona, is that they're trying to set the expectations low. And so that now when Paul George sits down and they actually have something even better planned, it's going to just blow them away.
Yeah, there it is. But speaking of pitches, here's what I'm interested in from you, Mr. Young. You have covered now the KD free agency, and you're about to cover the Paul George free agency. And I'm wondering what the Thunder learned from Kevin Durant's free agency that they have applied to Paul, not just now, but like the whole year long?
That's a great question. And really, you can make the case that the Thunder have had like three crazy summers. Because, you know, they had the Durant one, and then they had the uncertainty around Russ, and they traded for PG.
Yep.
And then now they have PG. So I think what they've really kind of – the big takeaway for them, Ramona, is, you know, there's a lot of, like – a lot of what the Thunder, like, preach and believe in is, like, you know, stick to your core values, believe in your philosophy, while also simultaneously, like, evolving and learning, which is, like, a difficult thing to do. One of the things about it, though, that they certainly have discussed amongst themselves is to understand that, like, each player is different. Each player's motivations are different. Uh-huh. And just because one guy, one superstar future Hall of Famer did this doesn't mean another future Hall of Famer did that. Or that one guy liked this doesn't mean that the other guy's going to like that. And so, you know, I think for the Thunder themselves, they probably haven't learned anything drastic or specific that they are applying. They clearly – They pulled out all the stops. I mean, from the moment Paul George walked off the airplane, they had a welcome party for the guy. They paid attention to every detail they possibly could within that. I mean, they had the right kind of candy that he liked. They took him fishing at, like, and who knows what kind of fish they had probably flown in from, like, the Pacific Ocean or something. Like, you know, Paul George is like, man, I just caught like a marlin in this lake. Like, what is going on? This is amazing. Hey. they probably, like, stocked it full with, like, exotic creatures, and so he's just blown away. But I think the bigger question for me, Ramona, is not necessarily what had the Thunder learned, but what did Russell Westbrook learn about recruiting the star team back? And I think what's interesting here is, you know, I hear a lot about Westbrook and George and, like, kind of the relationship that they've built and that it's really strong off the court. And I think what's key about this is that Paul George got to meet Russell Westbrook when he was 28 years old. Russell Westbrook at 28 years old is a lot different than the 20-year-old that Kevin Durant met and got to know. So, you know, while Westbrook and Durant had this, like, they had a unique bond and they had a respect and an admiration for each other, but there were a lot of scars to that relationship. Paul George is meeting and getting to know Russell Westbrook as a father, as a married man, as this grown, mature guy that has gone through quite an evolution in terms of personality. And I think that's kind of an interesting element here, because you can see one thing that Russell Westbrook was not known for, you know this, Ramona, is he's not a real social guy. When it comes to, like, team dinners and, like, hanging out, cookouts at the house and playing video games and doing those type of things, Westbrook was often kind of isolated because he wanted to be, because he is so structured within his own family and his own group. And he's kind of broken out of that shell with Paul George. You know, they went paintballing together out in L.A. a few weeks ago. They've done things off the court. So, like, I think Westbrook has kind of tried to learn, like, I gotta be a little bit different. I gotta be the recruiter here myself.
Do you feel like that's important to him, like, in his career? Because I always thought it was, like, this is his second chance to prove that he could keep, you know, a co-star.
I think that Russell Westbrook, you know, it's a conversation I've had with him and other people have talked to him about. He's aware of the idea that people don't want to play with him. And whether that's true or not, and really this is kind of an unfair setup in some ways for him. You know, like, Paul George coming to Oklahoma City, you know, they were never on the radar, right? So, like, you know, it was well known that the Lakers were his preferred destination. So, like, the Thunder and Westbrook always swimming upstream here. And, so, you know, if Westbrook can pull it off, it's a feather in his cap for sure. But at the same time, you know, it's going to be something that people are going to, you know, it's going to be something people are going to talk about. It's going to be a narrative that persists if Paul George leaves, whether it was Westbrook's fault or not, whether Durant leaving was Westbrook's fault or not. It's going to be something that people talk about.
Royce, you floated the 1+1 with Paul. Right. Do you think that's tied to LeBron, though? You, like, the guy floated the 1+1 with LeBron. Do you think they would just be both mutually deciding, like, you know, we'll kick down the can down the road a year, and then L.A. could be a possibility for both of them in 2019?
I think so, because, I mean, there's multiple reasons, right, for that, Dave. Like, one, you get to see where the Lakers go from here. You get to see what their core looks like, how you can see the Kawhi Leonard situation play out, for one. But I think for Paul George, there's kind of this fascination. You know, he talked about it publicly, and, you know, whether or not you want to take him at his word, he repeated constantly in Oklahoma City that this is year one. I want to see where this can go. This is the first year of something. And, you know, they even talked about Paul George even said it, Dave, and I assume he took a reference to LeBron, but he talked about who knows who we could even recruit here, you know, like in Oklahoma City. So I think Paul George has kind of had this mindset, like, I'm playing with the best player I've ever played with. Russell, you know, Paul George has never played with a player like Westbrook. And I think he's kind of like, I want to see where else it can go. Like, you know, he saw some really positive things there. And so maybe that's what his mindset is. But let me ask you this, on the flip side of this, Dave, do you feel like Paul George is kind of like, in a backwards way, the guy that kind of controls it. Like, you know, if he goes to L.A., that gives LeBron a lot of incentive to go to L.A., right?
But yeah, I agree with that.
Does that change LeBron? Like, is LeBron like, well, I might as well just stay in Cleveland?
Well, I think of when LeBron came to Cleveland in 2014, he never officially announced it, but it seemed like he gave himself a two-year timeline to win. Like, he didn't expect to win in year one. Now, when they got to the finals, it was he upset that they lost with Kevin Love with the shoulder hurt and Kyrie's knee blowing up in the overtime of game one? Absolutely. But he didn't necessarily expect to win in year one there. And I think it'd be the same case with the Lakers. If he went there this year, I don't think he would expect to win a championship in 2019. He'd love to, but I don't think he'd expect it. And so I think I could see a scenario where LeBron still goes to Lakers without a Paul George, without a Chris Paul, without a Kawhi Leonard, knowing that a lot can change in a year. But I do feel like it makes the decision a lot easier if he knows he has one guy in tow, because we know, like, that's this league, as much as superstars move around, it is still really a miracle every time that does happen, because so much goes into it.
Right.
And I think Paul George will have a lot of influence on what LeBron does.
Is there any of LeBron, Dave, that, like, he, you know, I feel like this is the great unspoken when it comes to LeBron and his future, that he is in his mid-30s, right? So, like, is there any, like, feeling of, like, it feels like LeBron is superhuman, and we saw him have maybe the best year of his career ever at year 15, but, like, where he's kind of like, maybe I don't have that kind of, like, giveaway year where it's like, let's, like, slow play this a little bit, where, you know, you got to hit the accelerate button because there's only maybe 3 or 4 years of true prime left.
Well, I mean, that sentiment might exist. First of all, I have a problem with your mid-30s line. Like, I'm 35. I don't even address myself as mid-30s. LeBron's 33.
Literally the definition.
So we have to say that he's early 30s, 33. Okay. Like, give a guy a break. But if LeBron thought that way, you know, then he might as well retire. Because there is no fast track to a championship outside of going to the Golden State Warriors.
True.
Like, I think even if, you know, the Boston scenario has been bandied about, but even there's fit and there's young players. And so I think he would behoove himself to have that patience. And again, like, he likes to say the way he plays basketball is he can see plays developing two or three possessions ahead of time. He kind of has to look at this the same way, that, you know, if I go to LA, it's going to look like one thing in July 2018, but it could look completely different in February 2019 and completely different in July of 2019. I think the same thing with the Cavs. If he comes back to the Cavs, he has to recognize that, yeah, it looks this way right now, but hey, my first year in Cleveland, we got JR and Timo and Iman Shumpert at the trade deadline. Next year, Channing Frye at the trade deadline. After that, Kyle Korver at the trade deadline. And then this past year, they completely changed the team at the trade deadline, to recognize that the team that he will be committing to play with in July could be, or very well should be, different than the team he's going to be playing with in April as he embarks on trying to make a fifth straight final.
Yeah, true. Because we live in this, like, post-Warriors world where everything's in the context of, like, okay, but what does it mean if you can't beat Golden State? But, like, there's also the truth of, like, there's a good chance that the Warriors aren't going to endure for the next 10 years, you know, like, as they currently are constructed. I mean, there's probably pieces that are going to come and go from that one as well. And while this window of dominance looks insurmountable for everyone, it could be over in a year and a half. You know, like, I mean, like, Kevin Durant could go somewhere else. You know, I think that's probably something that LeBron, Paul George, and everybody else probably has on their mind.
Dave, you know, when we were just finishing up the finals there in Cleveland, it almost seemed like the fans in Cleveland were resigned to the idea that he could have played his last game there. Like, it wouldn't be a shock to them if he left. If anything, I felt like they were expecting it based on how the team finished, based on how the whole year played out, how much he had to carry them. It, you know, in some ways, like, there's the perfect out for him right now, right? I don't think they would be burning his jersey this time around.
I agree with that. Yeah.
The run he had. And, I mean, kicking the can down the road 1 year, in some ways, you lost your perfect out.
Yeah, but I think that's okay, because he'll always have June 19th, 2016, if he ever decides to leave. Yeah. And he's bought himself the equity in this town. Where I think the overall rational sports fan will take over. There'll be a feeling of appreciation for the rest of his career. I think at the same time, you know, you look at the devil's advocate wise, everyone thinks he's leaving. He could get this great warm rush of, you know, goodwill if he wants to return, you know, and he's the conquering hero returning once again. And, you know, you almost took him for granted. And then you recognize just how special he is with what a run. He left everything on the court, played 82 games for the first time in his career, had one of the most remarkable postseason runs ever. And guess what? We get to run it back. And here's another season-long encore. And it's like you're the best rock band you've ever seen. And let's keep our lighters out the entire set. And I think as LeBron is someone who's, you know, much like Kobe, has taken a keen interest in storytelling late in his career, I think there's a big appeal there. And actually, to some extent, what's the one thing we all say that the one kind of wart on his resume? It's the decision, right?
Right.
Yeah.
He could kind of make up for that a little bit this summer by everybody thinks he's going to leave this time and coming back.
Huh.
Right.
Well, make the case, okay? What is there for him in Cleveland other than you? I know that you're when I go to Cleveland, they have a couple of nice dive bars right by the arena. You know, I really like Hyannis Market. You know, that's a good spot.
Yeah, it's a good
but
spot.
Make the case.
So the case is that he has a manageable path to the NBA Finals, and you need to get to the Finals, have a chance to win a championship, that a team that only had 29 games together in the regular season with pervasive injuries in those 29 games, with the head coach having a medical leave of absence for 9 games, still made it to the Finals. And in those Finals against the supposed juggernaut that is the Golden State Warriors, it's a one possession game in game one in the final minute. It's a one possession game in game three in the final minute. And so with some retooling and by the addition of a Colin Sexton, and then obviously additional retooling that we'll see whether it's going to be in the summer through trades or as we get into the regular season through trades or buyout market, where, you know, OKC says goodbye to Melo and then Melo says you can duck my sick in Cleveland this next season. They look a lot better. And I think that's a feasible path that he can look at and say, you know what, I have enough to get there. If we make some tweaks along the way, you know, it could have gone different. Because, like, I'll tell you this much, like, LeBron thought he had a chance in the NBA Finals. I know it was a sweep, and, you know, I know he thought his chance basically left the building at the end of regulation in game one, and that's why, you know, such an uncharacteristic explosion. But he believed he had a chance. He thought the Warriors had a little bit of a disarray going on behind the scenes. And if he stole one in game one, you know, who knows what happens in that opposing locker room, and then you're in their heads. And so it's not such a leap to suggest he would return. And, you know, everyone's saying, oh, Philly's going to get better. Well, Philly needs to re-sign these shooters. And Boston's going to get better. Well, will the young players have the same type of growth when they have the, you know, those two all-stars kind of controlling the ball the way that they do in Kyrie and Gordon Hayward?
Stay happy.
Right, and everybody stay happy. So, I mean, there's as viable of a path in Cleveland that you can actually kind of like tangibly look at. I think probably more so than any other place, because L.A. is like the great unknown. I've been calling it a blank canvas. They can turn it into something, but Magic has to do that. And it's, you know, the Lakers have been trying to do that for 5 years now, and they haven't been able to pull it off. And, you know, now sometimes I think it's benefited them. If they gave the max to Melo and LaMarcus Aldridge, they don't have a chance of LeBron this summer. And this is probably a better scenario, but they have to pull it off. Whereas the Cavs have to do less, I think, to convince it. The Cavs can say, hey, we know you're on the road half the year. We know your wife's, your in-laws help raise your children. It's nice to have that, right? It's nice to have four of your, close people close to you on our payroll. It's nice to be able to have a built-in vacation in the middle of the season where we go to Napa Valley as a team, or we give you our blessing to go down to Miami in the middle of the playoffs to hang out with your former teammates, and that's cool with us. There's a whole lot of comfort factor that he has in Cleveland that's baked in right now that, you know, another franchise could present it to him that way, but who knows? You never know. That's the fear of the unknown. In Cleveland, he has all those
things. Maybe the question becomes, you know, I hear what you're saying in a lot of that, because Dan Gilbert has proven he's willing to go deep into the luxury tax. He's willing to make moves. He's willing to do what really the Heat kind of didn't do towards the end of his tenure there, right, when they amnestied Mike Miller. But the question is, how much did the Kyrie trade and how much did the way that this year's team was built and then reshaped, was he happy or unhappy with how the Cavs approached it? Because they didn't have to trade Kyrie, hold on to that number eight pick. They could have gone out and used that pick to go try to trade for Kawhi or whoever else you want to say at the deadline. But they, because he wouldn't commit to them long term, they said we have to have a foot on both paths, right? We have to build for the future, but also, you know, while still trying to retain you. Was there a frustration on LeBron's part? Like, how much did that affect their relationship?
Oh, there absolutely was a frustration. And I think trust was eroded a little bit. But, you know, he was certainly re-energized by the midseason trades. And, you know, listen, there was a much more egregious break of trust back in 2010. And he was able to get by that. You know, and the quote that him and his camp use is progress over pride. And, you know, if he didn't get past that, he wouldn't have the greatest moment of his basketball career beating the Warriors in 2016. And so, you know, yes, it bothered him. It bothered him that the Kyrie trade was made. I wrote this, you know, along with Brian Winters. It bothered him as a businessman as much as a teammate, because he felt like when they reopened the trade, they had the Celtics on the ropes and didn't get another young asset out of Terry Rozier out of the deal, Jason Tatum out of the deal, the Sacramento Kings pick out of the deal.
Right.
But at the same time, him hanging on to that isn't going to serve him anything positive as he tries to play out the rest of his career. And despite that, and despite the rocky history he's had with Dan Gilbert, there's many reasons that he can look at and say, this is still the best place for me to finish my career.
Hey, Chiney.
What's good, man?
As a professional athlete, would you call yourself a business?
I definitely am a business. You think everyone has their own brand, right? And they're trying to expand their brands.
You're the CEO of Chiney Industries?
Yes.
Is Chiney Industries hiring?
You know what? They might one day. Not now, but maybe tomorrow, someday over the rainbow.
When you do. When you do start hiring, I know a great place where you can post a job online and get a bunch of candidates.
Okay. What's it called?
It's called ZipRecruiter. And with ZipRecruiter, And with ZipRecruiter, you could post a job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. Just one click.
You know, that's so smart, because everything's becoming digital, everything's becoming more technological, and, you know, ZipRecruiter puts it smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job, your brand, what you're trying to push within minutes. Not even hours, not days, within minutes.
Amen.
So you receive the best possible matches.
That's what makes it so
different.
It's like
swipe right. You know what I mean? It makes everything swipe right.
Exactly.
I like it.
Remember when we actually had to go and talk to people and find out? Now the technology brings them to us.
Cheat code.
You can even get a head start on the interview process by adding screening questions to your job post to help identify the most qualified candidates. You don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes. I remember when I was working for the Phoenix Suns, I had to go through intern resumes and cover letters and all that.
That's a lot.
It's boring.
Yeah,
It's a time waste. That's why I was the one who had to do it, because Steve Kerr and those guys were a lot more busy doing other things. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day.
Dude, you're telling me you can get hired in one day?
Yeah. Yes, you can.
That's legendary.
And you can find that person that you want to hire in just one day. ZipRecruiter. It's the smartest way to hire.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results.
And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right.
Free 99, baby.
Free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/collective.
That's ZipRecruiter.com/collective.
One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/collective. And I know some of you guys can't spell out there, so that's C-O-L-L-E-C-T-I-V-E.
Like Hoop Collective minus the hoop.
That's where it came from.
Yeah, smart. What? Smartest way to hire.
Morty.
Royce, when you look at the Paul George, you know, scenario, the Paul George of it all in this, right? So much of this comes down to personality and what kind of guy he really is, right? Just like it did with Kevin Durant. Just like, you know, the Thunder had him for 9 years. They knew him. And yet at the end, I think they thought they were keeping him all the way until the end as well. Until the Hamptons Five got
right
a hold of him. Right. But, you know, do they know Paul George well enough to know how to approach him or to have any sense of how he's going to behave during this process?
I'm not sure because, you know, they have felt incredibly great about their conversations with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Thunder pride themselves on being very transparent, very candid,
Yeah. Communicating
openly with players. You know, they did with Carmelo Anthony throughout the process of him not terminating his contract. I mean, that is something the Thunder, you know, want to do as well or better than any franchise in all of sports is like we communicate with our players, but they understand what the stakes are. They understand our position and they, you know, they feel comfortable like they know exactly what's going on now. Mm. But there's just no way that they can like truly feel like they have a complete pulse on, you know, what's important to Paul George, I feel like, without, you know, completely in the same way that they did with Durant. I mean, they, like you said, they knew Kevin Durant. They know Kevin Durant. They know, you know, what made him the way he is, what his goals and desires and all the different types of things. They knew the relationship with coaches and staff and teammates and all those type of things. And, you know, maybe in some ways, Ramona, it's almost maybe better not to completely know the guy. And maybe there's, you know, there's some secrets that it's, you know, in terms of a relationship, it's better like, you know, you keep a few skeletons in the closet and it's better for both sides to kind of have it that way. you know, like that, like if, you know, because I think that there's clearly with Paul George, you know, the Thunder feel like that he said some very positive things about their organization.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear from people that covered PG in Indiana for a number of years and they're like, yeah, that's what he does though. He just kind of says what people want to hear at the time. And you can't necessarily read into it. Well, on the flip side, the Thunder are sitting there going, man, he's saying these really nice things about us. And that makes us feel great. Like, you know, he clearly has to mean that, right? And so, but you know, on the flip side, back in Indianapolis, they're like, no, that's just what he does. So, you know, it's kind of hard to judge. I would say this. Look, I think the Thunder clearly all along felt like that they had, even from day one, put themselves in a strong position with Paul George. And, you know, a lot of people are going to relitigate the Carmelo Anthony trade and, you know, the fact that they made the deal. And, you know, I, for one, was not a big person in favor of it, of the deal for Melo. But it's one of those things where you kind of look at like the ripple effect of a deal like that. I know for a fact that trade made an impact on Paul George. Like he came from Indianapolis where he watched David West and Danny Granger and, you know, George Hill and different players kind of get picked away from an Eastern Conference Finals team. And then he showed up in Oklahoma City and they go and trade for a 10-time All-Star and future Hall of Famer. And I think Paul George was like, wow, that's what it's all about here. Like that trade like made a tangible impact on like his perception of Sam Presti and the Thunder organization. So does that play a factor come July 1st? I don't know. But I know that, you know, the Thunder, there was teams around the league that were certainly inquiring about Paul George at the trade deadline. And the Thunder had no desire and no inclination to even engage anybody really in those discussions because they felt like it was and you know Sam Presti like I do. He's going to try to maximize an asset if he can.
Yep.
And if he feels like he can lose it. And for him to say like Paul George is off limits to me speaks to the fact that they felt like that they've had a good chance at him all along.
So Royce, one, you were saying the Paul George is saying all the right things and it's making the organization feel good. Isn't that deja vu to Kevin Durant?
Yep. Yes.
No doubt about
it. Okay. And then the second thing is, Andrew, I need your help on this. When Royce starts talking bad on Carmelo, can I have like a Syracuse blasphemy button I can just cue you to hit? That's that, only, that only fair. That's
my
only
mic
fair
just gets cut.
To have that. Yeah, exactly.
What's Syracuse again?
I hate the button myself over here.
Let me say this, though, about the whole, like, didn't the Thunder hear this with Durant as well? That true. Completely fair.
Yes.
Durant said a lot of things that I think felt and it left people in Oklahoma City and the Thunder organization, you know, kind of like that they had been led down a path and been deceived a little bit. That is completely true. And I think a lot of professional athletes are guilty of saying things publicly that maybe they didn't necessarily truly mean, or that was for, you know, public perception or whatever it might have been. But there is also, like, the responsible thing to do is to not directly say, okay, they have one, you know, all-star player and they have another all-star player, so therefore those two guys are exactly the same. And just because one said this, another didn't say this. The Thunder's last big free agency kind of thing that they went through was Russell Westbrook. And that was a guy that said things and did the things that he said. So, you know, while it wasn't necessarily true free agency, they re-signed the last all-star player that they had come through Oklahoma City. And that's Russell Westbrook. They re-signed him twice. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's human instinct, I think, Dave, to kind of be like, well, Durant said it, so therefore Paul George. And, you know, you draw that comparison, but I think it's only fair to just say that, like, look, they're different people and they may have different motivations.
This is a question for both of you, and I'm curious because you both know the general manager of your teams pretty well, even though Kobe Altman's kind of still hasn't been on the job for a year yet. But I feel like we kind of know him, right, Dave?
Yeah. I mean, he's been here the 4 years I've been here.
Yeah. What's the wild card here? I mean, both of them have proven to be a little unpredictable, a little aggressive, right? Not afraid to take risks, not afraid to take a swing. So is there a wild card here that is there a rabbit that either of them can pull out of a hat before we hit free agency and then maybe even afterwards?
LeBron to OKC, that's the grand twist.
I'm bunking up with you, Royce. Let's do this thing.
We got an extra room. You can stay upstairs.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Hey, I will say this. That, like, at one point during the season that PG was talking about, like, you know, this is year one and who knows who else we can get here. And I'm pretty sure in his mind, he was thinking, we're going to go recruit LeBron. But
I mean, is there a Kawhi trade in here?
No.
Is there somebody calls up the Wizards and says, you know, that whole thing didn't work. Let's see if you can send Bradley Beal out here. Is there something in there that can you take Melo's deal and say, you know what, let you, now that you opted in, but how about we call up the Clippers and see if we can swap problems with DeAndre Jordan? Okay, DeAndre, come to Oklahoma for a year. I mean, is there something like that out there?
I mean, the Cavs made a real run at DeAndre at the trade deadline. It didn't work out, and it quite frankly disappointed LeBron. I think that would have been his preferred guy if anybody out was out there.
Yeah.
You can approximate DeAndre Jordan if this buyout goes through for Dwight Howard in OKC, in Brooklyn. And, you know, maybe you take a flyer on him and you think that just the reverence that Dwight might have for LeBron, having been kind of the understudy to him for all these years.
You're in Cavs right now, if that's their savior.
Well, I'm just saying they're going to have to be able to work around the fringes. Yeah. You know, they have a trade exception that's worth about $6 million. They have the ability to do the taxpayers mid-level. And that's really what this is. Unless they want to package, you know, Colin Sexton and Kevin Love for something, you know, they called up San Antonio with offering that type of package for Kawhi Leonard and came away with the impression that they were nowhere near having the type of assets that San Antonio would want from Leonard. So I don't think Leonard's happening. And if you do make a deal like that, you know, to say Charlotte for Kemba Walker and Marvin Williams, or Kemba Walker and Batum, or some sort of combination there, are you really getting that much better? Like, I'm not so sure. And so, you know, I think, you know, along the same lines of your story about LeBron not wanting this, you know, elaborate free agent pitches, you're not really going to, you're not going to have a cloak and dagger presentation to him. You're not going to say all of a sudden we're something we're not. What they are is a team that's been to four straight finals, that was in two finals games down to the final minute in one possession game, who have the ability to get better through continuity and improve their team at the trade deadline just as they have the last 4 years. And that, plus being a Northeast Ohio native and being the most beloved athlete the city's ever known, that will be the pitch. Like that, and LeBron already, the thing is, LeBron already knows all these things, right? So I don't think there'll be some grand scheme, but you know, who knows? Maybe Dan Gilbert has something up his sleeve that I haven't even thought of.
What about this scenario, Dave? Tell me if I'm crazy. That what if you know, because the Cavs tried to get PG once. What if LeBron and PG want to play together in Cleveland? Is that enough to motivate LeBron to say, like, okay, I'll stay here? And, you know, obviously you'd trade Kevin Love. I guess it'd be the Chris Paul situation. You know, Paul George would have to opt in to the final year of his deal, and then they would work a trade scenario there. Like, is that like a potential curveball that, like, could, like, if LeBron is like, so, like, I want to play with Paul George, but I want it to be in Cleveland. Like, is that something that could be worked out?
I think so. I mean, they tried to trade for him last year. They thought they had him, but right. why would two things? Why would Paul want to do that if he can play with LeBron in LA?
And we right. like
we know that's a tangible.
Unless it's just LeBron saying, "I am staying in Cleveland. This is where I'm at."
Got it.
I mean, I guess that's the only chance.
I guess that's the only chance. I don't know. Like, I think obviously the Cavs would have interest in that deal. I think they would. You know, Kevin only has 2 more years left on his deal, and the second year's a player option anyway, so it's not like you're trading security of having a star under contract for years to come if you do make that deal. And you know, does Sam Presti have interest in recreating that fabled UCLA team?
Yeah, I mean, you get the roomies back together, Kevin Love and Russell Westbrook. I mean, clearly the Thunder would, instead of watching Paul George walk away to nothing, likely to Los Angeles, now a Western Conference team that's in your way, he could go east and you could get something back in return. I think that's something the Thunder would certainly be ready to jump at.
Well, I think if they were ready to jump at that and the Cavs are able to put that together, I think, yeah, absolutely, that would improve the chances of LeBron returning to Cleveland. Right. But to me, like, I don't know, I reported that the Cavs aren't actively shopping Kevin Love. Like, you know, that was not coming from like one side of things. It was from, right. you know, to without revealing sources. And so I'm not quite sure exactly what the messaging was there. You know, right. Is it enticing teams to call up about him and enticing Sam to call up about him?
I'm not sure. Hey, just so you guys know, this is not for sale. I don't want to sell. Him. It's worth too much to
But if you choose to shop for him, yeah. you know, it's a different thing.
Just telling you, it's going to cost you a lot.
But again, LeBron's language has been, I need versatile playmakers. And he's been saying that for the last 3 years. Paul George is that. He can guard 4 positions on the court. He can bring the ball up. He can catch and shoot. He can do, we all know these things that he can do, right? Outside of Ethan Strauss, who once called him not a top 10 player in the league, which was interesting, but throw some shade at Ethan, take that radio, Ethan. I think that scenario would certainly satisfy the Cavs in terms of putting them in the best position to entice LeBron.
I'm just wondering the situation where Paul George sits down and say, like, look, I'm going to leave. Like, I'm just leaving, and that's just, I'm going somewhere else. I want to go play with LeBron. And then from the Thunder, they're like, okay, we can get you to LeBron, like, and we're going to try to do it this way. And, like, you know, I can just envision Sam Presti, like, you know, those going that direction just to try to make sure that he, you know, doesn't walk away empty-handed again. Because they've seen what it looks like when a franchise-level player walks away and you get nothing in return, and it's not a pretty picture.
But I think I'm just trying to put logic to this, but that goes against all of the reading the tea leaves of them being confident about him wanting a return.
Of course, of course. Oh, I know. But Ramona brought up the curveball scenario, so that's what I'm
okay.
Trying
okay.
To, I'm trying
just
to go curveball scenario.
Complete curveball.
He's just warming up. He's just warming up the arm. You know.
Yeah, I like it.
I think a lot
I'm
of
just
us.
In the bullpen.
You know, I keep waiting for the, like, today was the weird, you know, Lakers pitch thing that leaks, right? What's the next weird thing that happens? I remember last year, last time around, it was Dan Gilbert flying to Miami and we're all tracking his plane, right? Like, there's going to be some kind of strange side story to all this that we're all, you know, all of us amateur NBA detectives will be unpacking. But I've gone through enough of these free agencies now to feel like probably both guys have a pretty good sense of what they're going to do. All right, guys, on that note, I am going to let both of you go and take some downtime because you have a few days before the storm hits. And I expect both of you to be sunbaked, standing outside, freaking loans, which is like warm this time of year, right? Standing outside there, Dave?
Oh, yeah. It's actually, and, it is nice weather. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, nice in Cleveland this time of year. And then, Royce, yes. It is very hot where you are. And you are going to be, I remember last time I saw you and I started worrying about you getting dehydrated. Maybe this is like the mom and me. I'm like, oh gosh, you make sure Royce is drinking water because he's on TV all day and it looks very hot there.
Thank you.
You get rested up because I'm sure you're going to be working around the clock. And then finally, sometime maybe in the first week of July, we will all have our answers.
It's good times though. This is the fun stuff.